Blog Talk Radio.
You know I love you, right? Love you too. Ain't nobody got what we got.
No, no. What I be with my baby.
Yes. Said built from the concrete, baby. Don't get no better than this.
Relationships, and with that, it must be Thursday night. How you doing? I am your host, or one of your hosts, KL Belvin, and my lovely wife, Tiffany Braxton Belvin. It'll be on the other line in a few. Oh, you're there. I didn't know you were there.
Of course.
Tiffany's gonna be. All right. So there she is. And we want to welcome everyone that is listening. Thank you for tuning in to GQ Palace Radio and Reality and Relationships. We do this every Thursday night right here on blogtalkradio.com/GQ-Palace. Just click on the Reality and Relationship link and you will get in and you will get to hear us talk about relationships. And not just relationships between boyfriend and girlfriend, husband and wife. We talk about the relationships with people, with at work, your doorman, if you have one, everyone. because any interaction with any other person over a period of time is a relationship, and we're going to deal with it and discuss it. And because my lovely wife put the tonight's topic out there, we have an interesting show tonight. She might go ham tonight, so just buckle up. Buckle up. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, you're going to have to hang out, because I'm pretty sure Mrs. Braxton Belvin has some things to get off her chest. But with that said, we're going to do like we usually do. First, let me thank the Lord, too. You know, I realize that we, every week get on and we get ready to do, I want to thank the Lord first and foremost, for without him, nothing that we do would be possible. So I want to say thank you to the Lord. And I am happy that he has allowed us to be here another Thursday. So, baby doll.
Yes, Rose.
How was your week? How was your week?
My week started off like any other week, you know, doing the work and making that money. Mm-hmm. And then my employers dropped the hammer on me.
Tell him, son. Tell him why you're mad, son. Tell him why you're mad.
Actually, I'm not mad, and you know I'm not mad.
Really?
Because we talk about this every week for I don't know how long. That
yeah.
The job, although I like it, I like the job that I do, I like most of my colleagues. I
key
like,
word, most.
I did not like the way.
F you. I like you. F you.
I did not like the way the business was being run. And
well, crimes were being committed.
Yes. Most definitely.
But go ahead.
It's funny because when you tell people that illegal stuff is going on, people don't really understand. They don't have a clear idea of what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll think, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. Because actually sitting on my job, I've had people say to me, you don't know what you're talking about. Oh, I don't think that's correct. And I had to explain to someone. I had to explain to someone, I went to school for this. I did have to study business law. I did have to study human resource. And actually, my position was as a human resource coordinator. So I had to study this. The job, and, you know, we're going to talk about it, you know, later on, because that's basically the topic of tonight's show, not me losing my job, but things that you should know as an employee. But you know, I sat there with people who have been in the company for many, many, many years and basically had their jobs handed to them. So it was no such thing as going to school, actually learning the craft. They had their jobs handed to them. So basically whatever the boss said, they did. They didn't question whether it was legal. They didn't question whether it was ethical. They did what they thought they needed to do in order to keep the job. And I watched this every day for 3.5 years. And Tuesday, the job gave me my walk-in papers because I just wanted to sit silently about the nonsense that was going on. And they figured that they would tell me that they were reorganizing. Well, if you're reorganizing and you're trying to do it in the best interest of your company, you don't reorganize and keep people on that don't know how to do the job, and you get rid of the person that does know how to do the job. That's just the reality of it. So, but like I said, I'm not mad because it just opened new doors for me. It made things possible for KL and I to do that we probably wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And I'm thankful. You know, people say, be thankful for the negatives and the positives in your life. And I am, because they help me grow. But other than that, on a lighter note, I received my confirmation email from the pageant. I was asked to come back 2 years ago. I judged a pageant in Florida on the Miss Teen Cities of America. And I had a wonderful time, a wonderful group of people, wonderful young ladies from the ages, I believe, of 5 to 21, and spent an entire week, all expense paid, in Florida. That was 2 years ago, and they asked me to come back. So I just received my flight information, the confirmations, and I'm looking forward to that. I'm actually going with one of my close friends, Suzette Bonzo. It is her birthday that week, so we're going to celebrate her birthday. She's looking forward to it, too. And that's about it.
Well, that seems like a lot. Well, listen, I am glad that you're keeping your head up, and, you know, this is what the game is. And like I said, we're going to get into it further because I think sometimes folks either overrate themselves or underrate themselves in terms of what you can actually do when an employer is doing, you know, overtly negative things. Or if you believe that there's a hidden agenda and you've got caught up in the mix, you know, we're definitely going to discuss that too. And what do you do when you're laid off? You know, it's a traumatic thing when all of a sudden you're told you ain't coming back to work no more. Even if you're prepared for it, it's still a little jolting. But I think you have to consider what your alternatives are, and we'll talk about that too. And some of the greatest comebacks started with unsuspecting setbacks. And so we'll definitely discuss that too. My week has been what my week is, work, teaching. But I can honestly say the week was pretty good. I went to a training on Election Day. You didn't do the news. We'll do the news in a minute. I went to a training on Election Day, and it was real good, mental and emotional, mental health, because I am teaching health education this year, and it was good to refresh myself on some of the areas that I need to understand to be able to teach our kids. And then I saw two of the instructors, two people that I knew from like 7 years ago, and I got a chance to thank them because the training that I went through with both of them 7 years ago opened up the door for me to have some financial opportunities through the certificate that I received from the training, as well as I got a certificate for this one. I go, any chance I get, I go out and get extra knowledge. I don't care where I get it from, and if there's a certificate to get, I'm trying to get it. Simply because, and a lot of people make this mistake, one, I don't have to pay for it. Two, the fact that you get some type of physical acknowledgement that you attended higher learning classes, those become things that you can use. Those become props that you can use when you're out searching for different employment or to excel in the employment that you're in, especially as an educator. And you need those artifacts when you are going different places, because it also shows that you're not willing to stay in one place, that you're willing to enhance or to reconnect with stuff that you should have known, but now you're getting it again. So, and I have
it's
another training next to
development.
There you go. Well, exactly. Personal development. Well, I know there's a term for it. I'm just saying it's something a lot of folks don't want to do.
Right. Most people don't realize that, especially if you're still in the game, it's something that you should do. If you're still working, you shouldn't sit there and think, I'm just doing my job. You should always try to enhance what you're doing as long as you're doing it. I don't know if my husband is still there because I can't hear him.
Oh, no, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I wound up hitting my mute button. I think what happens is a lot of folks will get stagnated because they get real comfortable in what they do. I see it especially with educators. Well, that opens up the door for not only younger folks but new folks to come in, and if they're coming in with new and exciting ideas based on current things and you're not able to make that adaptation, well, there you go. You open up the door for not only for your job to be taken, for the reorganization, and you may not be a part of it. And so I am not going to be anywhere and miss on opportunities to increase my understanding. And the one thing I have learned about knowledge, it can be used in various places amongst various people. And just because you learned it in one area, you will be surprised how often things that you learn resurface in other areas, which gives you an opportunity to be involved in the conversation. Now,
Definitely. With
that said, today I got to admit was not a good day, only because as a professional, and I do try to remain professional all the time, even when there's negatives. Well, actually, let's back up a second. Monday there was a little fracas at my job, and the union rep and the principal decided to get into it verbally and so forth and so on. Okay. But once that cleared out. Changes had started to be made. And all of a sudden, my program got changed. So I went from having one number of classes to getting two more. So I'm sitting there going, I had nothing to do with the argument. And my program got changed. So I'm definitely unhappy because people have to remember, this is another thing you need to understand at work. When you open up the ball at your superiors and you take your shot, and that's your right to do that. So I'm never going to tell somebody, don't take your shot if you feel that's what you need to do. Understand that when you go at your boss, for whatever reason, there may and probably will be repercussions. Those repercussions may not only land on your desk. It may be like a wave and hit everybody that's around you, close to you, or in your department, on your floor. And you got to be prepared for that because standing your ground, for whatever reason, may cause everybody around you to dislike you. Now, if you believe you're right and you're exercising your rights, do you. But I can honestly say, this particular situation, I had nothing to do with it, wasn't involved with it, didn't really care about it, and now I caught the punch in the face. So I'm mad at everybody. So when everybody says, let's go to have drinks after work, no. Let's go have Thanksgiving, no. Because folks don't stop and consider. You won a small battle, but placed us all in the line of fire for something that gains you a small amount, but we all lost more than you gained. And
right.
That's called a pyrrhic victory. And I want to tell folks, go look that up. That's when you lose more gaining the victory than you really wanted to lose. So you gained the victory. Yes, okay, you won. Congratulations. But it cost you all your troops. So you're king of what? So I'm just frustrated about that, and I believe that I allowed my frustration or just being lazy today to get in the way because I came up from the gym. I was teaching class today, got upstairs, and I was doing what I was supposed to, but I wasn't as prepared as I should have been when the principal came in. And then it turns out that my kids hadn't did their work, which I'm not sure if it's just them being lazy or a reflection on me. Either way, I took it personal because that's the way I do my work. And Tiff can tell you just a few minutes before we got on the air, it still wasn't sitting well with me. Because one, I'm trying to figure out why didn't my kids do their work? Two, why wasn't I prepared? And three, it'll never happen again. Yeah, I'll make a mistake at work. I'm human. I won't keep making the same mistake because you're not going to get an opportunity to say, didn't we talk about this before? Not going to happen. So once you call me into the office, once we have that meeting of, Mr. Belvin, you understand? I really don't say anything. I nod my head because I understand. We won't have this conversation again. And I'll do what I'm supposed to do. So for me, after tonight, I will be on my grind. I will be up till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning if I have to be. My lessons will be straight. Not that they're not now, but I'm going to make sure that anything that I didn't get, I'll have. And I don't care if I'm tired. I don't care if I'm frustrated. Never again will somebody walk into my classroom and I not feel like I'm on top of my game. So that's the way I felt today. So. But one more day is Friday, and then there's a 3-day weekend, and I am getting baptized on Sunday.
Yay!
I am excited, and for some selfish reasons, this ritual is an outwardly ritual to my belief system, but I want this because I don't hide it. Everyone knows that I'm a man of God. I'm a Christian. And I know how some people feel about religion. I know how some people feel about the idea behind religion. But this particular ritual, for me, has nothing to do with the religion. It is my way of saying, Lord, I'm ready. Wherever you're going to take me, whatever you want me to do, let's go. Because at this point, it's about standing up for what I believe in and saying to the God that I pray to, I'm ready to be whatever it is that you want me to be. And now, whether you understand that or not, at this point, doesn't really matter. And so that's what this is about. And I'm glad my family, I'm glad my wife is going to be there. And I got to admit, I'm a little nervous, too. I don't know why I'm a little nervous. I guess, you know, because I know the steps that I'm taking. I kind of feel like Moses did when he was standing in front of the Lord. And he's like, go to Egypt. You crazy? Yeah. He's like, no, you're going to go. And Moses was trying to get out of it. Well, I don't want to get out of it, but I know the steps that I'm taking open up the door to good, and it's going to open up the door to some negative. And maybe some of the negative that happened now is just an attack, but it's cool because I'm ready for it. Good, bad, and different, I'm ready for it. So if you want to come out and join us, we will be at Church at the Rock at, I forgot the address. It is 98 and, yeah, I got it.
No, it's not 98.
Well, not 98, yeah, what church is that? 92nd. Actually, I'll get it. It's, I'll bring it up right now. It is at...
It's on East 92nd.
1280 East 92nd Street between Avenue J and Avenue K. You have to come in from the Avenue K side, but if you go down, I mean, yeah, come in. If you come in from the Avenue K side at 92nd Street, if you come in from the Avenue J side, you go down 91st Street, you can turn into the parking lot that way, but I would say it's easier to come up 92nd Street and turn in that way. But yes, between J and K on 92nd Street, 1280 East 92nd Street. The time is 11:30. I just got an email from the pastor yesterday or earlier today saying he's looking forward to it. And after him and I met and sat down and talked, I'm looking forward to it. And as I said, this is something. I got baptized when I was 5 or 6 years old, but I was too young to understand what I was agreeing to. So they kind of threw me in the water and it wasn't my choice, but it's okay. The Lord has walked with me all those years. So 40 years later, 41 years later, I'm doing this. To make my stance in the world. So I would love for you to be there. Or if you just want to send a well wish, hey, hit me on Facebook, hit me on Twitter. I appreciate it. So this is what it is. So other than that, oh, another thing too, almost forgot. I am taking part in the National Novel Writing Contest for November. 50,000 words have to be completed for the month of November. And this is day 7, I think. What is this here? This is day 7. And I'm averaging a little over 1,000-plus words a day, and that's missing 2 days. I didn't write on Monday and Tuesday because I bowl on Monday and Tuesday. I was being lazy. But I have been banging out 1,400, 1,500 words, and so I will get to the 50,000 words. I am going to do that because it's something that I want to do for me, and I want to get this story done in the 30 days because it'll be a book, 50,000 words, and then once the editors get to it, chop it up, whatever. That is going to be one of my next books coming up. The title of the book is called Josiah's Pain. But it may change, but it's about a story of a young lady that had a negative situation happen to her that caused her a tremendous amount of pain that she's held on to into her adult life. And because of that pain, she does a lot of things. She's very promiscuous, and she doesn't really care about men, but she sees them as service objects. But she has a best friend who knows the Lord and tries to convince her to let go of that pain and explains to her that she can't find love or God or anything until she lets go of that pain. And then she meets someone that she could possibly love. But the problem is she's fighting with the love that she could have and the pain that she does have. And she's, and there's some twists and turns there I'm going to try to add to it. So it's actually my second fictional book that I'll be working on. My first one is Lukewarm Saint, and that should be done for 2014. I'm working on the edits now and the rewrites now, and that one is about a young African-American teacher, again, who can't seem to keep his pants on, but he's been having feelings about something not being quite right, and people keep trying to explain to him that if he doesn't change his life or change the things that he's doing, something negative could happen. And of course, you have to read for yourself what happened. And yes, my books have a connection to the faith. But it's Christian fiction, but I don't even necessarily, I think it's just regular fiction, I would call it. But it has a flair and a connection to the faith because that's what I'm about. And I believe that you'll enjoy both of them. So definitely look for those in 2014. And our third, and I'll stop after this, final project, is the Making Marriage Cool Again Handbook. Will be done for 2014. That is the handbook that Tiff and I created to go along with our Making Marriage Cool Again movement. Bullet points on things and that we believe will help your marriage. That is what we did the last two and a half shows. We introduced the baby 2 shows ago. But if you want to check out the show so you can listen to what's going to be in the handbook, makingmarriagecoolagain.blogspot.com, and you can listen to the past shows, and you'll be able to hear what the handbook is going to have inside of it. And we're going to create that so folks can take the handbook with them, maybe pull it out when they're about to get into a little something in the house, and so they can find a way to keep their marriage cool. So I have a full slate, full plate, as they would say, for 2014 through Braven Publishing, and this is what we're doing. And I am really trying to exercise the talents that the Lord has given me to open up doors to not only heal folks, but to have some fun. I'm tired of some of the stuff that I see out there being promoted to our kids. I'm tired of what's out there on the shelves, and I'm just going to put my ring, my hat in the ring, and hope that somebody can curl up with one of my books and say, hey, I like the story. Wasn't a whole lot of nastiness, not a whole lot. Ain't going to be no cursing. Everybody a little bit, you know, I don't know. We'll talk about that, but it's definitely designed to give you something to enjoy while you're reading. So, but other than that, everything else has been great. So what's going on in the news, my love?
There's no happy news.
Oh, here we go. Let me gear up. And if y'all don't know, if this is your first time tuning in to Real Island Relationship, for some strange reason, Tiff always finds some news that gets you to go,
I try to find happy news, and it's very, very difficult. Every once in a while, I'll find happy news.
Stuff out there.
It's just difficult. The world, I don't know what the world is coming to. If you haven't been tuned into your television and seen not too far from us in New Jersey, a young man, 20 years old, went into the mall, and no one knows why. He went into the mall and shot up the mall. He didn't kill anyone. He actually didn't shoot anyone. And he didn't seem to be there to hurt anyone but himself. Because
they say he passed a couple of people and just looked at them, but they saw the weapon, but he didn't fire it at anyone.
Witnesses actually said that they heard him say, I don't want to hurt you. I'm not going to hurt anybody. They said that they heard him say that. So he basically went there, I guess, to kill himself. Yeah, because that's exactly what happened. The only one that ended up dead in the whole melee was him. And he killed himself. It wasn't death by a police officer. But it's just so sad to think, what in the world is going on with the mental state of our people? I mean, his family was destroyed.
I don't think it's addressed, though. I don't think it's addressed. Like, I don't believe that the mental state of many folks is being addressed. So there's people that need help and are not getting it, and there's no outlet, and, you know, so much has been taken away, so much has been closed off to people. And if you notice that these are a lot of younger folks, these are not older folks that seem to be breaking down who would normally have the pressures that people have. These are younger folks that are folding up who haven't even got to 30 yet. Your life shouldn't be that difficult that by 20-something years old, you're ready to kill yourself.
And you're right, because you and I have had this conversation. The things that we've been through in our lives, the things that our friends have been through in their lives, our young people today are soft. They fold up at the slightest little bit of anything. And I'm starting
to
believe.
Hold on. When you say that a lot of these people, they're soft, then you got to blame their parents, because then that
means
their parents are my age. Or a little younger. Let's see, I'm going on 46, so we'll say those between the ages of 35 and 50. They failed these kids because they're the ones who raised their kids and
You're
grandkids
right.
to be soft.
You're
so
right,
I
and I agree with you.
Put on the kids, just, you know, go ahead.
I agree with you. That's what I was about to say, that the parents, I don't know if it's because we live in an age of entitlement where parents want to give their children so much that it's now the coddling syndrome, that they're not actually teaching real life principles. They're basically handing their children everything. And as soon as you say no, it's like, what do you mean no? I actually see young people younger than 25 react to no like a 3-year-old. So
you mean I can't have? Go work. You know, you're 100% right.
Like,
my son, go ahead. I'll tell him to say, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, even in the workplace, I'm looking at these young 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds with this attitude like they're doing you a favor by coming to work. It's so, their thinking is so warped to me.
you know, it's part of it is like, you know, I go through that with my sons and their mother. You know, I'm telling them, no, you can't have because you didn't earn, or you got to go out and earn because you're old enough now. Here's my son, 21 years old, and he lost his job. And I'm like, okay, he lost his job because he was parking rental cars, driving rental cars. And the policy of the company that he worked with, and it's actually ironic that I worked for the same company years ago when I was 18, 19, 20. So, okay, so I said, okay, they had the same policy when I was there, is that you basically, it's a three-strike policy. If you scratch or damage a car three times, they fire you. Now, he came into the company having an accident on his record, but they still hired him because he was young. And they said, okay, but that counts as a strike, so you cannot have two more strikes. You lose your job. So he lost his job. So now here he is, you know, out of work, and he goes, Dad, can I borrow $100? And I go, okay, what do you need $100 for? You know, I'm thinking, okay, he needs to get, you know, some clothes for interviews, stuff like that. He's like, there's a basketball league that I want to join, and I need $100 because everybody on the team got to put up $100. I was like, excuse me? And he's like, I need $100. I'm like, my man, did you just tell me you lost your job? So you have no means of giving me back my $100. So first of all, you started off with, can I borrow? So you should be, Dad, can I borrow somebody to go get a new tie? Dad, can I borrow somebody to go get a new shirt? Your main priority is go and secure new employment, not right. Can I go play basketball? Basketball shouldn't even be the thought on your mind. But here's the thing. His mom, it was $150 he needed, that's what it is, and he got $75 from his mom. Can he get $75 from me? No. Come on, Dad, no. And I said, I'll tell you what, I will lend you the $100, and you are giving me back the $100. I don't care if somebody, whatever, you're going to give it back to me. So he was like, okay, fine. So he got a new part-time gig. He thought I had forgot all about it. He said, yo, Dad, I got the job. Really? Okay. I'm getting my $100 next week, right? What? Yeah. I want my $100. Forgot you borrowed $100 from me. He said, I don't get paid that much. Okay, well, that means you're going to get paid less. So you're going to give me my $100. And don't make me come over there and check you because you ain't that old yet. So then his brother's birthday had came. So I said, here's how it's going to happen. I'm going to give your brother $100 because I told him I was going to give him $200. You're going to take the $100 that you're going to give me and give it to him. So once I told his brother that he had $100 coming, I knew I had me a speaker that was going to let me know if that money didn't get there. So, sure enough, I hit him up the week after. I said, did you get the $100? Of course. You know, I would have called you if he didn't give it. But the idea was he was tight. But, no, you're not entitled. You don't have an entitlement because you're my son. I work for mine. You're now 21. You are legal. You can tell me to kiss your – well, no, you get punched in the mouth for that. But you can do what you want because you're grown now. You're in college. Your job now is to take care of you. I'm not right. out – if you need assistance or if there's an emergency, playing basketball on a Sunday in a league with your friends is not an emergency. That's a luxury. And I'm not right. paying for luxuries, never have. And the mom still wants to do that. Well, that's on her. And that's one reason why we're divorced, because – I'm just not going to do certain things, and I'm sorry. I see kids now, 13 years old, 14 years old. They have a $500 phone in their hand, $1,000 worth of clothes on their bodies. They can't write. They can't read. They don't understand what basic writing is, what basic structure in a sentence is. When you say something to them, they can't believe it because they can't seem to wrap their heads around it. They don't speak well. They don't read. I told her, okay, we're going to do 20 minutes of independent reading. Why we have to read for so long? 20 minutes is a long time?
20 minutes is a long time?
Yes, and got frustrated and said, I can't do it. I said, what you mean you can't read for 20 minutes? That's too long. I can't focus that long. My head's
wow.
hurt. So maybe you need glasses. I just don't like reading. I'm like,
wow.
I'm going to read. And then when I said, okay, so now I assigned them independent reading. They have to do response journals. I gave them a list of responses. They have to choose one and simply write a 125-word response. Why so many words? That don't make no sense. 125 words is a lot. So I explained to the kids about the monthly challenge. I said, listen, I'm not asking y'all to do anything that I'm not doing for myself. I'm in a monthly challenge that I have to try to write 50,000 words in 30 days. I said, that comes out to 1,700 words a day. That's 1,700 words. That's almost 12 times, 13 times more than what I'm asking you to write. And I am getting it done. D, you crazy. Why you got to write that much? Because it's what I want to do to write a book. Well, I'm not trying to write no book. No, you're not at 125 words. It's a response. I told you I don't like to read. And I'm like, okay, but the time you're spending debating is a time that you could have spent reading and then writing about what you read.
But where are these parents? Where's the involvement? Because I remember my parents were involved. Like, my mother and father brought books home. They sat down with us. They helped us do our homework. They made sure. And my parents worked. They both worked. They worked jobs. They came home after work. They made sure we did our homework. They looked at our report. Everything. I couldn't come home and tell my mother, oh, I don't have homework. Let me see your book. And I better have work in the book that was done for the day. I couldn't show my mother blank pages for the day. Because she would be calling the teacher to ask what's going on. Where are these parents?
Well, that bothered me, too, and that's kind of what got me blown up today is that when the principal came in and looked, the kids didn't have the work. So one of the things I'm going to go over tomorrow is we're going to redo the expectations so the kids can know it. But so what else going on in the news? Forget about entitlements. And what else going on in the news?
Well, there was a young lady in Detroit. Renisha McBride is her name. She got into a car accident about 2:30 Saturday morning, and after the car accident, she parked her car, and she went to, I guess, one of the locals' houses to get help.
Local
rang
what?
The doorbell.
She
went,
went
to one of the local people, one of the houses where she had the accident, to get help. She rang the doorbell. No one knows exactly what happened, but she ended up being shot in the back of her head by the person in the house, and she's dead.
Wait. In the back of her head.
In the back of her head, which meant that she was no longer facing the house when she was shot. The person shot her in the back of the head, and the police, at the time that this article was written, actually, the police had not arrested the person who killed her. They had not filed charges or anything. They actually said that she was mistaken for an intruder and shot in self-defense.
Please don't tell me black woman, white man.
Of course. Now, where she, the town that she was in, they said is 86% white. And I have to say, I don't like, because we live here in New York and it's very, very diverse, but when things like this happen, it becomes a black and white issue. And I don't think everything is a black and white issue. But I can almost bet if there was a white person ringing the doorbell 2:30 in the morning, the person on the other side of the door would not have shot the person in the back of the head. But because she was
you
a want
to make that
person,
assumption. You want to make that assumption. Let's just say the person was crazy. That's a hard assumption on anybody. And you know what? Let's just say the person that did the shooting was stupid and that it had nothing to do with color, because you know what? I'm tired. I'm so tired of what seems like this blatant, like you can just do whatever to someone of color and all you have to do is say you were scared or you didn't know. I'm sorry.
And Detroit is much like Florida, where they have a stand your ground law. I don't understand the stand your ground law when you're not being assaulted.
I don't think it's a stand your ground. I think at that time of the morning, it's fear, and fear. I don't believe it's stand your ground. I believe what they're going to go with is they're going to say fear. And that no one normally comes to the door at that time, and the person felt the person was trying to get into the house. Now, you don't know how the person came to the door. You don't know if the person was banging on the door trying to get help. And then we do live in a world where people try anything to gain entry into a person's home.
You're absolutely
and
right.
You don't know how.
That's why you dialed 911.
No, but hold on. That's true.
You
but
dial
911
and
hold
you
on.
Wait.
Hold on. Again, that's an assumption. you're assuming that she was able to focus to do that. If she's in shock from the accident.
I'm talking about the person inside the house.
Yeah, granted. But that's what I'm just saying is that unfortunately, it's all tied together. Let's be real. If somebody comes here at 2:30 in the morning is banging on the door for help, I'm not coming to the door like, hey, you know, everything cool. The door going to be swung open like, hey, what you doing? Now, couple that with if I have a weapon inside this house, you don't know. Now, the key to me is once you say she was shot in the back of the head.
She can't be a threat to somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Once you tell me that, it is very difficult for me to believe that a person is threatening in any form or fashion when you're able to shoot them in the head and the back. And here's the reason why I'll say that. If anybody that listened to the show on Halloween, I explained that I was shot at when working at the motel. The officer that helped me, he had actually explained to me about getting a gun license and having a gun to protect myself. I think I said that on the show. One of the things that he said to me was that if I go through all those steps and get the gun and I keep it inside with me, he said, if you ever have to use it, do not shoot the person in the back. Do not shoot the person if they're turning away from you. He said, because you cannot explain how you were being threatened with a person,
if the person
turning away from you. Exactly. He said, facing you, he said, try not to shoot them in the chest. Try to shoot them in the leg. But if you have to, just shoot. He said, but don't shoot him in the back. So I'm sorry. When I hear you say the person was shot in the back of the head, you gotta. I'm sorry. Somebody gotta go to jail. I am. You know, and I'm not even a lawyer. This is some things I wish I could go. I think I've watched enough Law and Order to be able to argue that one. Because I'm just tired of hearing these this foolishness, man.
It's horrible.
Who was she in the accident? How far was it? I don't know if you have these details. How far, like, what were the details of the accident in reference to the person's house or home? Like, what made her go to that home?
It didn't give those details. And I guess we'll have more information as the case goes on. But basically, she got into an accident. And she needed help. Her phone battery was dead. Her cell phone was dead. So that was the reason why she went to the house to try to get help. And unfortunately, she was only 19 years old, and she ended up dead on the porch.
And I take over the mail.
Of course.
Older male?
I don't know, because the police won't identify him. That was what the article said. The police would not identify him.
I guarantee you 50 or better. I'll take a bet right now. I guarantee you 50 or better. And the reason why I'm going to say this is Detroit is a high crime area. It's somewhat like New York in some areas. But in certain areas, posh neighborhoods, they will seem to always issue a license to a homeowner who's Caucasian, who's 45, 50 or better, because they're not considered a threat. Most of the time, they have some type of standard mobility or upward mobility. So they have what people, I guess, like to see in a profile. And this is why you notice. Now, even with Zimmerman, he just lives in Florida where, you know, they give everybody guns, I guess. But you normally see in some of these older dudes, they got weapons. And I don't know if they have to get training for them yearly, which they probably don't. But 19, no longer here.
Yep.
Over an accident that she was in.
Yep. It was horrible.
Yeah. You know, it, now I'm starting to see why those people that are, like that show, that the people who are building, like, the bunkers and I don't even know the name of it, you know, but they preparing for the end of the world.
The doomsday preparers.
There we go. There you go. I might start doing some stuff like that myself, man. But I probably won't get a weapon, so you know, I have to get a knife.
They won't give you a weapon. You're too much of a threat.
All right, I'll be like Tyrese in The Walking Dead. I'll just walk around with a hammer. Let people have it. That'll be my weapon of choice. Be straight up a hammer. It'd be the real hammer time. Stop playing. So what else going on, baby doll?
You know, you and I were talking about the situation with the Dolphins players. What's his name? Incognito and Martin?
Yeah, Richard Incognito, Robert Martin, I think is his name. And it went from outright bullying to there's a whole lot going on. And it sparked national attention because everyone's like, how can a 6 foot five, 300 plus pound man be bullied
for a
year and a half? But the response from the team has been in support of Taquito. Well, they say the bully, but what they're trying to say now is that it wasn't bullying. It was like what the NFL does. And this guy was just emotionally weak or whatever. And that's, but here's the sad part.
How old is he? Is he under 30?
Yeah. Martin is, this is only a year and a half. He just got out of college. He's a graduate from Stanford University. So he has to be 24,
okay.
25 years old.
So he falls under that category. He falls under the category of our youngins that seem not to be able to hold up under pressure.
This is different. He comes from a very educated, his family. First of all, his father's white, his mother's black. And they're both graduates from Harvard University. They have grandparents who graduate from Harvard. And he was on his way to Harvard, but because he played football, he went to Stanford. But he is a Stanford graduate. Now, everyone knows, you do not graduate from Stanford to even get into Stanford unless you have a ridiculously high GPA. Stanford is one of the best colleges in the country. So he is not stupid. This man and both his mother and father are lawyers. He is that kid. Now, he's just big enough to play football, so he played. Now, what some are saying is that what's going on is what's standard in the NFL and that they wanted to toughen him up and that he was a standalone. And what you got to look at is that if he's a highly educated kid, cultured kid, then there's just things that he's not going to find cool with maybe some of the folks that's around him that normally play this sport.
I understand, honey, not finding certain things cool because there are things that go on, like in my office I worked in, that wasn't cool for me. It might have been cool.
But you can't compare it to.
The problem I have with it is you're a grown man. I don't understand, as a grown man, no matter what your environment has been, if someone is making you feel uncomfortable, nobody's gonna make you feel uncomfortable for a year and a half.
Hold on a second. And that is a typical response from people on the outside of a professional arena. First of all, political correctness and things that are doesn't play in an NFL in locker room. So things that are done in an NFL locker room would never be allowed on a regular job. Things that go on in the NFL locker room are not politically correct. Things that are said and done, many folks would say, well, I would never allow that to happen. Well, first of all, let's stop a second. You're talking about a 53-man team who, once you make the team, things are supposed to stay in-house. So whatever happened, whatever he did, see, we got to wait till the whole thing comes out because you don't know if he took it to the higher-ups of the Miami Dolphins to allow them to deal with it, or did the higher-up put this into motion almost like a few good men where it was like San Diego got to get that code red because he was soft. You don't know what the situation is, so you got to wait. Now, the fact that they're attaching bullying to it, it's not bullying if it's the regular hazing and then he just started to feel uncomfortable and didn't say anything. Now, if he said something and then was still made to feel uncomfortable, yeah, then that's wrong. But at the same time, you have to understand that the NFL locker room is a different animal. Most people, tons of people, have no idea what's ever happened. So when you have to listen to those that have played, those that are playing, and try to piece it together. Now, the problem here is that he went outside the organization, just like in the movie Few Good Men, when San Diego went outside the Marines, and that created the issue. So now he's labeled a snitch. And I heard a guy today, and it really stuck out with me. Brother was an African-American brother. He made a point, two points that was made by two different African-American brothers, and I got to give him credit. One I don't, was a caller. The other one was Stephen A., who's on ESPN. Well, the first point was, he said this brother, the mulatto brother, was in a no-win situation. By going and telling, and then he checked himself into a hospital because he had emotional issues. He basically had a breakdown. By going and getting help and checking himself into the hospital, he's considered a snitch, and now people don't want to be bothered with him. So he doesn't win there. If he turns around and beats the guy up who's been harassing him or bothering him or whatever, we still don't know exactly what was done. He's now possibly labeled an animal, so he still doesn't win. And you don't know how much weight to fit in to be a part of this locker room, because you're talking about a sport where men, like right now, Tony Dorsett, a Hall of Famer, who played for the Dallas Cowboys in the late 70s, well into the early 80s, now has brain damage where he forgets how to get to the soccer field from his house when he's riding with his kids. He forgets where he's at. He's been on planes and forgot where he's going and that he was even on a plane. Because, and he's only 40-something. He's 50, I think, now, late 40s or early 50s. And his brain is mush. So the damage that these guys go through and the camaraderie that they have with each other is nothing that no one has ever seen unless you've been a part of it. Now, I'm not justifying Cognito's or Incognito's behavior. I say let's wait and see if it was as bad as one is saying, or is it as bad as someone else is saying. I just have a problem that, like you, as a man that size, letting a man harass him, I say, bro, knuckle up and do what you got to do. You play a violent sport anyway. And if y'all going to be inside the locker room, no, I'm being very brutally honest, and if anybody doesn't agree with me, I'm sorry. I know violence may not be the answer, but they play a violent sport. They play a sport where you are actually legally allowed to assault the person across from you. And this goes on for 48 minutes, banging into each other, throwing each other to the ground, and to the point that if you're damaged, I won. And if you are damaged, you got to hurry up and come back because somebody else can take your spot, which then you lose your money. And it is the only sport where there's no guaranteed contract. So you get your money up front when you sign, but you got to keep making the team to be able to get paid, and the team can cut you at any time, and you get no dough. It is the only professional sport that does that. So you got to understand the
mental. You're telling me that he was afraid to speak up for himself and say, listen, I don't feel comfortable.
Maybe not so much afraid, but maybe if you feel there's nothing that can be done, then what's the natural reaction? I'm not going to say nothing. How many times have you told me, when I say, well, why don't you say something, you go, I'm not going to say nothing because you know it's not going to matter anyway. You told me that yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So if you told me yourself.
That's under different circumstances. I told you.
If you say there's nothing that can be done. Now, if he's on that level where he don't feel anything can be done and it's going to create more of a problem, he's not a rookie. He's been down for a year and a half. He just held that. But emotionally, if it's bothering him, well, he checked himself into a hospital. So it isn't like he quit and just said, oh, the Dolphins did me dirty. He really had something wrong. So you don't know what he was dealing with. So that's why I said we got to wait, because right now he's being vilified for snitching.
Well, see, that whole snitching thing, if Incognito was really bullying him and doing stuff that shouldn't have been happening, then he has a right to tell. He has a right to tell his managers, his superiors, whatever.
But if 51 men are now going to look at you sideways, if 51 men don't want you around, that's very difficult, because you got to sleep, travel, and compete with these guys. And you're talking about being the outcast in that small environment. Remember, that's a small environment. 52 players, 53 players, the coaches. So you're talking about less than 60 that eat, travel, sleep. Pretty much they start, when's camp start? Season starts September. Camp starts in like July. They go from July to February. So March, April, May, June. You got like a 3-4 month window, and then you get right back to it. And your money is based on the performance of the cat next to you. You want a cat with you that you believe is snitching on the things that might be wrong that y'all can handle inside the locker room? Nah. It's easy to say you should say something. Most people don't. Look at police. You got rookie policemen who keep quiet because they don't want the rest of the police force mad at them. You know, it's sad, but it is what it is. I said I'm going to wait until everything plays itself out. He's got a family full of lawyers, so trust me when I tell you, if something was done to him super negative, mother and father ain't going to, because now you're talking about a legal case that you ain't got to pay for. two Harvard lawyers in your family plus other ones? Trust me, this,
well,
this will come
you know,
out.
You know, I know about the ramification of speaking up, and I'm just not one. And I've always been this way, maybe because when I was younger, I was bullied. And I just think that just speak up for the little guy, especially when they're afraid to speak up for themselves. So that is going to be one of the topics that
we're
going to
take a break. We're going to take a
interrupt me.
Break.
Excuse me, I was talking.
Okay.
I was
don't go off on me. Yes. Go ahead, ma'am.
I was going to say, when we come back from this two-song break, we're going to discuss what it feels like to be standing alone and making a stand in the workplace and what it can cost you, because it definitely cost me. So we'll be back, Reality and Relationships, after this two-song break.
Yes, ma'am.
Coming, but they didn't know what to think. They didn't think this could happen. Wasn't really sure of me. So I'll try to keep on moving. I won't trip off what they say. And I know that they'll keep hating on me each and every day. I gotta keep moving, yeah, yeah. I keep on praying, yeah, yeah. Gotta stay faithful, yeah, yeah. I got to get higher.
God.
was only a substitute. I've been out in these streets and not alert. Even though she's in my own, this ain't where my heart belongs. Sex in the air, no love in here. Soon as I get through, I'm out of there. And it feels so bad, but it feels so good. Wishing I could care. Baby, she can't wait to have.
Because she has some things to explain to you and set this up the right way. So this next hour, she's going to explain to you some things that you really need to pay attention to. So grab a pen, because, you know, you might be dealing with some of these things at work, or you might have a friend or associate that's dealing with some things at work. And work is always a touchy situation because we're talking about how we pay our bills, how we pay our rent, how we live life, and our job supplies much of that, if not all of that. So some of y'all say, well, I would love to say something, but I don't want to get fired. All that's going to be discussed. So, baby doll, the floor is yours.
Thank you. I first wanted to start by saying that people have teased me because I started working when I was 16, and I think I've worked in almost, not all industries, but many, many industries. I've worked in retail, I've worked nonprofit, private, public, telecommunications, healthcare. I've worked in union environments, non-union environments, and union environments meaning that you basically have a bargaining unit where the union negotiates with management the benefits and the securities that you have on your job. Most of the time with the union environments, people feel much more secure because you know that if you walk into your job and your boss is having a bad day, that they're not going to fire you just on the spot. Where non-union environments, if your boss is having a bad day and they say, you know what, you got to go, Tiffany, you really might not have a leg to stand on because you're an at-will employee. But what I first tell people when they're going into a position is to know what your responsibilities are. Have a clear Have a clear understanding of what your job title is, what those duties are under that job title. And also, every company must have a handbook for their employees so that you know what you are supposed to be doing as an employee and what your rights are as an employee. So every company, every person, you go into a job, they say, you know what, we're going to make you the cashier. We're going to make you a receptionist. Have an understanding. It should be in writing what your responsibilities are on a daily basis. Now, that doesn't mean that when, you know, times change, that they might not add other responsibilities to it, but have an understanding that they're not going to come to you as a cashier one day and say, we need you to paint this wall. So I have to say that the position that I was in with the company I was recently laid off from, I actually went in as the receptionist, and the job came to me. I have to say it was a blessing because, like I said, I did like the job. I enjoyed it very much. But I started off as a receptionist, and of course I had my specific duties there. And I was in that position a little over a year when the human resource coordinator had a stroke on the job. They actually took her out on the job, and she was not able to come back, unfortunately. Within, I would say, a few weeks of her having a stroke, I was asked by the current administrator at that time if I would think about taking the position. And I thought, wow, this is what I'm going to school for. I would love to do that. And my first question was, what were the responsibilities? Who would be training me? And he said himself and the director of nursing would be training me. And then the next question was, what would I be paid? Of course, because you go from being a receptionist to now the human resource coordinator, you're increasing your responsibility a lot. As KL knows, that transition, it wasn't smooth.
Well, hold on. Let me jump in here. This is the one place I can tell you I believe that Tiff misplayed her cards, because she said yes, because they said, well, we just got to, you know, clear that, check that, get everything straight. Tiff said yes before knowing what the final decision was, because she was thinking of what the opportunity the position would bring to her future, which it has, because it's given her experiences that she needs. But for me, I need to know what my pay is going to be for the new added responsibilities, that I'm going to have, because just because I've changed positions, if the dough's not right, man, please, I might want to stay where I'm at. So that was the only misplay or misstep I can actually say I think she made in her trek. Go ahead, baby.
Now, I have to be honest that when the administrator spoke to the proprietor of the company, which this is a privately owned company, so he had to get permission from the proprietor first to even offer me the position. And, of course, he said he liked the work that I did. We had a good rapport. And he said he would rather promote from within. So he went to the proprietor, and he also went to the director of nursing. They were happy with my work. So that was the reason why I was offered the position. When he went to the proprietor, he said, well, we need to discuss compensation. Let's just say that the proprietor did not think it was in his best interest to pay me what the job was actually worth. So the administrator,
what they were paying the person before you.
Yes. And they were paying the person before me considerably a lot more money. And I'm not going to say that I should have made as much money as she did, because, again, I would have to learn the position from scratch. They would have to sit down and show me how to work some of the systems, you know, different things. So I understood, no, I'm not going to come in and make just as much money as her, but I surely expected to make a considerable amount more. Well, the proprietor didn't see it that way, and he put an offer on the table. And even the administrator at that time thought it was an insult. He said, Tiffany, I know this is an insult. And he said, no, I'll go back to him. What is it that you want? So I gave him, because I understood what the going rate was for the position. And that's another important thing, is you should know when you go in to negotiate your salary, your rate of pay, you should have an idea of what that position pays. If that position, what the market value is, right? If that position on average pays $10 an hour, and you tell someone you want $20 an hour, they're gonna laugh you off the office. You should have an understanding. So I did have an understanding of what the position paid. I wasn't at that time sure how much the person prior to me was making. I learned later on how much she was making, and it was a considerable amount more than what I was even offered for the transition, the so-called promotion from receptionist to human resource coordinator. So basically, he said to me, listen, I'll understand if you don't want to take the position, because it's going to be a lot more work, and the pay is not competitive. I said, you know what? I'm not going to look at it as I'm not making enough money. I'm going to look at it as I'm getting the experience. Because knowing the field, basically, if I was going outside the job, they want you to have the experience and a degree. Or the degree. I didn't have the degree. I'm working. I'm still going to school for it. So I knew that getting the experience was going to be beneficial to me. So I said, you know what? I'll do it. Not knowing that when I took the position, because they wanted to save money, they figured, oh, we could have her do both jobs. And that was one thing I explained to the administrator going in. I said, I'm not going to do both jobs. They had someone that filled in as a receptionist. She actually came from another part of the company also. And she basically, she was pregnant at the time, so they knew that she would be going on maternity leave. But also, she only worked Monday to Thursday, because the facility is basically ran by a family. It's a family-run facility, and it's a Jewish family-run facility. So a lot of the Jewish women don't work on Fridays, which is something else I'll explain later. So she worked Monday to Thursday, which meant someone would have to be responsible to run the front desk on Fridays. I said, I don't think I'm being compensated. The administrator, had a good report. I don't think I'm being compensated enough for the position that I'm doing. I'm definitely not going to do both jobs for the amount of money that I'm making. And he understood that. So they ended up having someone else do the job of the front desk on Fridays. But there were times, especially when the receptionist went on maternity leave, that they figured, and I had this discussion, it's so funny, honey, I had this discussion with the assistant administrator prior to the receptionist going on maternity leave. I said, she'll go on maternity leave, so we need to start discussing what's going to happen with the front desk, because I think you should hire someone, because a lot of times when people go on maternity leave, they go from anywhere from 2 to 6 months on maternity leave. I've even known people to go on maternity leave for a year. So we really need to discuss what's going to happen, because I still have responsibilities as the HR coordinator that I can't take away from that in order to help you run the front desk. Well, the proprietor felt that it was okay to have the duties split between myself and the office assistant, which I had a problem with that also. Going forward, the receptionist was on maternity leave for 3 months. So imagine for 3 months, you still have the duties of HR coordinator, and then you also have to have the duties of the front desk on maybe every other day. So it made it difficult. Work started to back up, but I was able to handle it. As I started learning more responsibility as with the HR coordinating, I started to realize that there were certain things happening that shouldn't happen. And I started to realize that the people who have been in a company for a long time, 10, 15, 20, 30 years, they were used to having things just happen because that's what they were used to. And they figured it was a privately owned company, the owner could do what he wanted. And I was actually told this recently, and I had to explain to the person who told me that just because you have a company and it's privately run does not mean that you can break the law. And Kael and I, we have a publishing company. And I explained there's still certain criteria that we still have to follow as business owners. So I'll give an example that one of the laws that were being broken, and a lot of people, unfortunately, were victims to this on the job, and if they were complaining about it until recently, that unlawful payroll deduction. Your company is not allowed to arbitrarily deduct money from your paycheck as a penalty to you. And I remember a few years ago, I went into a restaurant, and it was actually a diner with some friends, and the waitress was really, really upset. And I asked her, what's the matter? And she said that there was a large group that came in, and they ran out without paying the bill. I said, oh, that's horrible. So she said that the owner makes the waitresses pay the tab if anyone runs out. And I said, say it again. She said the owner, if someone runs a tab and they run out without paying, the waitress has to pay for that. I said, no, you don't. And she said, yeah, I do. I said, no, that's illegal, sweetie. And she said, they take it out of my paycheck. I said, honey, contact the labor board and file a complaint because it's illegal for them to do that. I said, yes, it's unfortunate that you got stuck with a tab, and unfortunately the management has to eat that, but they can't hold you responsible for that. They cannot take it out your pay, and they can't make you pay for it. So I don't know how long she was working, and she said it happened all the time. Well, here at the nursing home that I worked at, what was happening with the time clock, either people would forget to punch in or they wouldn't punch in because they were running late and wanted to get paid for the entire day. Whatever the circumstances were, I believe there were certain times that the time clock wasn't working. And basically, the administration came up with the idea that if anyone is missing a punch on the time clock, whether they missed a punch coming in the morning or at the end of their shift, they would deduct an hour from their shift and also delay them a week's wages. So you would have to actually wait an additional pay period before you got paid. Now, it is an inconvenience to wait the additional pay period, but the idea is that the part that I had a problem with was the 1 hour deduction. And prior to them posting this, I explained to the administration that it's illegal to deduct an hour from anyone's wages arbitrarily. You can't do it. Even if they did forget to punch, you still have to pay them for the time that they worked. This went on for maybe 2-3 months, maybe more, that they were illegally deducting an hour from each person who forgot to punch. Those hours add up. What they were doing with those hours, I have no idea, but no one would make a complaint. So what happened with me, it showed I missed a punch. Usually it doesn't happen to me, but it showed I missed a punch. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Maybe the machine wasn't working. But I was able to look at the time clocks and see that I needed to fill out the paperwork in order to make sure I got paid for the time. Now, basically, what I did was the payroll person, which is another problem, he wasn't there right now. So he only came in once a week. I'm sorry?
I thought we should get some water.
Okay. Well, the payroll person wasn't there. He's not there regularly, so he comes in maybe once a week when he wants to do the payroll from home. He does payroll from home. I emailed him and scanned my form, and in the email I said to him that I had missed a punch. Here was my form to make sure that I was paid. I said, I anticipate that I'll be paid on time since you're receiving this form within enough time. And I also stated the law to him regarding the deduction of an hour and said to him, I anticipate that I will not be penalized for the one-hour deduction based on the New York State labor law. And, of course, I was paid on time. I was not deducted an hour. But I think it left a bad taste in their mouth because the following week
there's another factor there, too. There was another factor there, too, that you're leaving out.
What's that? Oh, you know what? I totally forgot. How could I forget my dear husband? My husband's a bully because he actually, when I sent the email,
Let me jump in here. What I told my wife was, first of all, I'm a master at the email game when it comes to professional emails, and people need to realize that emails can be and are held up in court. So one of the things that I said to her is when she sends that email explaining about the laws and everything else to make sure that she gets paid, because they are very stubborn on not paying people. I mean, they outright just jack you and, you know, basically leave it on you to do whatever you're going to do. It's almost like, yo, sue us. We don't care that we're breaking the law.
We're
going to do whatever. So I said, okay, I have found, and Tip likes to call me a bully, but I have found that some folks who appear to be strong like that, the best defense is a very strong offense. So what I told Tiff to do was when she sends the email to CC me along with, to our company, along with the other folks that she's CCing the email to. Now, by doing that, once I got the email, I held on it. I sat for a couple of days, and then I went back to it, and I sent the response, but I hit reply all. And basically what I was doing was letting everyone else in the email see that I was acknowledging that we got the email. But what I did was I sent it in a professional manner. I said, thank you for sending the email. We got it. Please let us know how this turns out. Now, the reason why I did it that way was because they know, like even her supervisor said, isn't that your husband? Because actually he responded to me and said, isn't this Tiffany's husband? And, you know, we just wanted to say everything's been taken care of, whatever. Now, here's my thing. You see, he started off the email with a question. Isn't this her husband? He wasn't sure because he's not sure who was reading the emails. And that was my whole point of responding back to Tiff, but allowing them to see, is because people tend to forget. The blind copy, the people that you don't see, is the biggest problem because you don't know who else is reading the email, so they knew that they had to be careful because even the gentleman who does the payroll responded with, like, a question mark, like, well, who is this person?
But
so
that's
sure
also
enough,
reason, that's also a reason why the assistant administrator asked, isn't this her husband? Because he knows that the payroll person could be very flip and disrespectful. So he wanted to make sure that there was no problem because they've seen the size of my husband. So.
And they also know that I'm not a stupid man. It's not just me being a big dude. They also know that I'm a very intelligent man, but I'm also a person that's not going to deal with any foolishness. And so that was one of the situations there. So they were like, well, let's not play games because he is an educator. He's not one of these corny cats that's scared to death.
Right. So basically, I guess they contacted their lawyers because a lot of times what companies will do is they'll try to implement stuff without anyone knowing that it's illegal. They'll see how it goes over. And like I said, for 3-4 months, you had employees having an hour deducted from them. And we have about 300 employees. So if you think about it, you multiply that by the amount of people that miss punches, and on a daily basis, we would have anywhere from 10 to 20 people miss a punch. So you start adding those hours up and multiply it by the amount of wages that they're making, it starts to become a lot of money that the company is saving.
They're just outright robbing folks.
Which is right, outright
stealing.
You're stealing from people. So I made it clear you're not going to steal from me. Another thing that people don't seem to know is, and we also learned, and a couple of my other colleagues learned, is that a lot of times the employer, they the status, whether you're exempt or non-exempt employee. Now, an exempt employee basically means that no matter how many hours you work, you make a certain amount of money. You have a salary. So say, for example, if you work 20 hours a week, if you work 48 hours a week, you're going to make $50,000 for the year. A non-exempt employee basically would get paid based on the number of hours they work. The company was actually treating the employees like exempt and non-exempt employees. That meant that if you worked overtime, they didn't pay you. They only paid you for 7 hours for the day. But also... But also, if you work less hours, they deducted whatever you work less. So suppose for the day you're supposed to work 7 hours. If you work 6 hours, they would deduct that hour and pay you for 6 hours, which is technically illegal. If I'm a salary,
what about the supervisor that didn't get their lunch and they still weren't paid?
I'm going to address that also. I was going to address that also, that we, because the facility does not have enough staff, we have nursing supervisors that would have to work during their lunch. Now, in New York State, legally, you're entitled to a break once you work 4.5 hours, it's 15 minutes, I think 6.5 hours is 30 minutes. You're legally entitled to that. We have supervisor nurses who would have to work without any breaks because they don't have enough people staffing the facility. And the crazy part about it is not only are they working during their break, they're not getting a lunch hour at all. The payroll person still would deduct an hour from their lunch, from their time, as if they took a lunch break for an hour. So if you worked 8 hours straight with no lunch, you only got paid for 7 hours.
Nobody said anything because they were worried about their jobs. Wow.
They did it for years. And I started asking, how in the world did these people get away with doing this for so many years? And the supervisors, you know, they'll complain to me because they know I'm soft-hearted and I'll listen. But they were afraid to say anything to anybody in order to have anything done. To order and say, you know what, at least pay me for the hour. Because a lot of them say, you know, the work has to get done. There's no one else to do it. I'm the only one here to do it. Okay, I'll do it. But at least pay me for doing it. How do you deduct an hour for someone? And it's funny because I'll give you an example. There were times when I would come to work maybe half a day. I would work 3.5 hours, and a payroll person would deduct an hour from me for lunch. Well, I worked 3.5 hours. I didn't take a lunch, so I want you to pay me for the hour. And he would come back and pay me for the hour. But the supervisors, they were so afraid to speak up for themselves that they, over these years, and some of them been here for 20, 30 years. One of them is about to retire in December. They sat and have not taken lunches for years, every day. And it just, it makes sense to me. We also had a circumstance where the religious holidays, again, as I explained, there was actually
Did you mention that if they would ask you, were you Jewish?
I'm about to discuss that. I'm sorry.
Oh,
you're
sorry.
Jumping ahead.
Oh,
goodness.
I ain't got my script. Where my script at?
The religious holidays. Again, as I mentioned, it was a Jewish facility, and I learned that the Jewish employees were required, whether you were a practicing Jewish person or not. Just like we have some people, they're devout Christians and devout Catholics, then you have some that are not. But regardless, if you are a Jewish person working in a facility, you are not allowed to come to work on Jewish holidays, whether you wanted to or not. Also, they have their Sabbath, which is sundown Friday and through Saturday. Once it's sundown Saturday, they're fine. But during that period, Friday to Saturday, they're not allowed to work. Basically, I sat in the office one day, and this was after one of our new orientation classes. They had been there for about a month. I had a discussion with one of the new orientees, and she came into the office. The staffing coordinator was whispering, because by this point, the staffing coordinator and most of the people in the office knew that if I heard something that did not sound appropriate, that I would speak up. I would say that's illegal. I would say what I had to say. I would not let it be said around me without people knowing or being informed that what was being said to them was wrong. So the staffing coordinator whispered to the new orientee. She asked her, are you Jewish? So she didn't know that I could hear her asking her this. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, why did she ask for that? So the woman responded, not really. The staffing coordinator went further to say, is your mother Jewish? And the staffing coordinator, the orientee said, yes, my mother is Jewish. She said, but I don't really practice. The staffing coordinator commits to say, well, we have a policy here that Jewish employees are not allowed to work Friday nights and Saturday mornings, and you're also not allowed to work the Jewish holidays. And by this time, they had three Jewish holidays in a row, 3 weeks in a row. There were a set of Jewish holidays where there were 2 days during a week that they had to be off. So she said, well, we have to change your schedule. So she contacted the other staffing coordinator in the other facility to explain that the schedule had to be changed. The other staffing coordinator said why, and she said because she's Jewish and she won't be allowed to work the holidays. She won't be allowed to work Friday evenings and Saturdays. This completely obliterated the hours that the nurse assistant would have worked if the schedule would have stayed the way it would have stayed. So say, for example, if she was scheduled for 40 hours in the month, her 40 hours now turned to maybe 15 hours for the month because she gave the time that she was allowed to work, and because the staffing coordinator decided to ask her about her religious connection, it now changed. And not because that's what she wanted, but because she was forced to do so. And it was so blatant that I said to her, who asked you to ask her, was she Jewish? And the staffing coordinator said, well, they told me to ask because, you know, it's my job. I said, someone told you that it's your job to ask people about their religion? I said, that's against the EEO. And the staffing coordinator said, what's EEO? Now I'm thinking, okay, you've been a staffing coordinator for 13 years. I've only been doing an HR job for a little over a year. How do you not know the equal employment opportunity that you are not allowed to ask about religion, sexual preference, no type of discrimination, no gender bias, anything? You're just not allowed to do it. And I said, what you just did is illegal. She said, but, you know, if I don't ask and it could be my job. I said, but if she files a complaint with the labor board, it could be your job too, because do you think that these people are really going to sit here and tell anybody that they told you to ask? I said, if anything, they're going to throw you under the bus. I said, we didn't tell her to ask if she's Jewish. But that was that was what happened, basically, with her asking, was she Jewish? Now, to reverse it, it was so funny because one of my colleagues, we became very close recently, within the last couple of weeks, her schedule was changed. She's not Jewish. She's actually African-American. She attends church on Sunday. She's been at the facility for some time, and all of a sudden her schedule got changed where she would have to work Sundays. And she went to the administration and she said, listen, I don't understand why my schedule was changed, because I don't normally work Sundays because of my religion. Well, the administration told her that because of the needs of the company that she would have to work Sundays. So, of course, she was outraged, and she went higher up and went to the administrator, and whatever the administrator said, it didn't pan out. And it was so funny because she actually told the administrator, listen, the administrator is Jewish. She said, when you come in here on Saturday, I will come in here on Sunday. And I had to laugh. I heard this in my own ears. I had to laugh because she was right, because she told them it's religious discrimination. And it's so funny because when I mention it to the staffing coordinator, I mention it to other people in the office, they have this, I actually had someone tell me, well, you know, people just have to understand that this is a Jewish facility and it could be run the way we want it to run. I said, no, it can't. I said, you can't just break the law because you want to break the law. And the crazy thing is they actually have this in the handbook. They actually have these clauses in the handbook as far as the Jewish people not allowed to work Jewish holidays. They actually have the clause about the deduction of 1 hour. And I'm thinking, you cannot put something in a you cannot put an illegal clause in a contract and think that it's binding, because it's not. And it just, it became overwhelming. And I think the last straw was recently the Department of Health. They started implementing this policy where they're trying to basically combat the influenza during the flu season. And they came up with this process where they're asking all the employees that work in healthcare facilities to have the influenza shot. And actually, I mentioned it a couple of times on my Facebook page that as far as who was for the influenza shot, who wasn't.
Let me jump in here a second, too. Anybody listening, please understand that no company has the right to force you to put anything inside your body. They have to, they tell you what the repercussions are. They can tell you what's at risk. Because I was that way with the HEP vaccine when I used to work with the developmentally disabled. They used to ask me, you know, did I want to take the HEP vaccine? Because, you know, we do have some of our clients had hepatitis. I said, I'm good, because I knew that you were giving me an ag culture in my body. And I'm sorry, whether it's the conspiracy theorist in me or whatever. Don't give me anything that's active unless right. I'm dying of something and that is needed to help me out. I don't want it, because I'm not taking any chances with what they got going on here. Ever since I saw that video of homegirl that they took the flu shot and then started walking like she had cerebral palsy, I was like, no. So no one can force. And you know what's funny is they can't even take a blood test. Police can't even take blood from you without permission from a judge, and even then a judge has to have beyond proof that it is necessary for that to happen, because it is a violation of your rights. So someone can't take something out of your body and put nothing in just because you work for them. So please keep that in mind.
Right. And basically what happened is the Department of Health, they had mandated not that you have the flu shot, but basically those workers who worked in healthcare facilities and had direct contact with residents or patients, if you did not want to take the flu shot, when you're giving care or and you're in direct contact with a resident, you are required to wear a mask, which many of the employees said, you know what, we'll wear the mask. The administrator literally harassed, disrespected people's HIPAA rights. And when I say HIPAA, the HIPAA is basically your private health information. He would basically ask people about their health information in front of other people, which he was not supposed to do. It was overwhelming to me. And he never came to me. It was funny. He did not come to me until the very end. I was the very last employee he came to out of practically 300. And I even knew at that point that the reason why he wasn't coming to me is probably because they were going to let me go anyway, so he wasn't going to waste his time. But I listened to him actually blatantly lie to people and tell them if they didn't take the flu shot, then they couldn't work at the facility. And again, basically use the scare tactics, all because the proprietor is so cheap, he did not want to have to pay for the mask that would have been, had to been used in order to do patient care. So just like when you go into a hospital or nursing facility, you'll see the nurses put on gloves each time they take care of a patient. Well, it would have been the same thing with the mask, where each patient that they deal with, they would have to put on a different mask. And yes, it can start to become a great expense. So they basically bombarded people every day. Sometimes they went to the same people on a daily basis to say, are you going to take the flu shot? Why are you not going to take the flu shot? You know nothing. And he's talking to you, you know nothing's going to happen to you. You can't make that statement. You're not a doctor. You don't know what people's health conditions are.
One person took the flu shot and got sick.
More than one person took the flu shot and got sick. More than one person. Another person had a really bad reaction to it, and her arm swelled up and all type of craziness. So I'm
walking like homegirl.
I'm listening to him basically lie to these people and just harass them on a constant basis after they already said that they weren't going to do it. And finally, a few people gave in because all they kept thinking was, you know, I don't want to lose my job, and he's threatening my job. And it was horrible. It was really horrible, and it was so funny because he came to me, like I said, I was the last person he came to, and he said to me, Tiffany, have you had the flu shot? And I said, no. He said, are you going to get the flu shot? And I said, no. He said, well, you have to bring in a letter from your doctor stating that you need a medical, some type of medical document stating that you can't take the flu shot, which is also not true. You do not have to provide a document to say that you can't take the flu shot. You can just make the choice not to take it for whatever reason, and you don't have to give a reason. He was asking people, well, what is your reason for not taking the flu shot? And people actually sat there and entertained him, and I'm thinking, okay, you're being polite because he's the administrator, but you actually don't have to. You don't have to give a reason. My reason is I don't want to take it. So when he said to me that I have to provide medical documentation that I can't have the flu shot, I responded to him, you know that there's no legal requirement for me to do that. And I don't think he was expecting that. And he said, to do what? I said, there's no legal requirement for me to give you medical documentation. And he didn't even respond. He just walked out of the office. But I just found it interesting that so many people allow themselves to be bullied, because that's basically what he was. He was a big bully.
Now, I know some of y'all are listening. I know some of y'all are listening to Tiff and thinking, you know what? I know why she got laid off, because she just causing problems.
And
let me explain something to you. Ain't nobody more defiant than me. I have been at 5 different schools in the last, let's see, 7 years. I've been in 5, 2013, 2014. I've been at 5 different schools in the last 6 years because I refuse to let principals push me into a corner that I know is wrong and to have me do things that's going to cause me either to lie to children, lie to parents, or just make me out to be the liar where I would be the one holding the bag if something went wrong. The one thing that if you're listening, think for yourself that if you call yourself spiritual, if you call yourself religious, if you call yourself a Christian, Muslim, whatever, even if you don't believe in none of that and just believe in universal justice and karma, when you do other people dirty at work and you know you're doing them dirty, the repercussions to your future, the repercussions to you could be so devastating that when that works its way back to your desk, you might not just lose your job. You could lose your freedom.
Yes.
Because a company may be doing so many illegal things that you're just a small part of the iceberg, but you could have folks come in and just start slapping handcuffs on everybody.
Absolutely.
Especially when you're working in city, state, and federal agencies. So when things start to go wrong, even in a private setting, now, even though Tip Works working for a private company, they still had to follow state and city regulations. You're talking about the health department. You're talking about the Board of Labor. You're talking about federal regulations. You're talking about tax regulations. You're talking about things that are just outright illegal to be a part of. You can't say to somebody, well, the reason why I did it, I was trying to keep my job.
Now, and that's what I tried to explain also.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't do that because
it's not
somebody's
going to
say, it's not an excuse. Non-compliance, I didn't know, is not an excuse. You can't do it. Ignorance is not an argument for non-compliance. Because here's what they're going to say. So all those people that you messed over, you didn't think about them? And then when it's come down to what you're going to be doing is telling a judge, I thought about myself over the people that I was doing dirty. Well, at that point, a judge is going to even it out. That's why the scales for the legal system is blindfolded. They're going to weigh out the thing. So it's different if somebody was threatening you. It's different if you have proof that somebody put you in a situation where you thought you were going to be harmed. Now you can actually say, I wanted to say something. I even did say something, but what was I supposed to do? They were threatening me. But if you're just going along because, well, it's the company, it's the boss, or he owns the company, please. The law is the law for a reason. Please know it.
And I just want to mention also that the payroll person is the son-in-law of the proprietor of the facility. And he's allowed to get away with so much. And it's so sad because when I think about it, if it was anyone else, they would have lost their job a long time ago. A long time ago. People have gone without getting paid for weeks because, for whatever reason.
But they've not paid people for the first 1 week and then said, we'll pay you the following week. So you actually worked your week, got paid nothing, and then they said, okay, we're going to give you your money next time.
Right. There was a year when I first got there, because I've been here 3.5 years. The first year that I was there, I remember them not doing payroll on time. And a lot of the employees, it was the week of Thanksgiving, and a lot of the employees, unfortunately, could not have Thanksgiving dinner with their family because they didn't get paid for the week. They didn't get paid until the following week, which I felt was very distasteful, because when it came to Jewish holidays, they paid them early to make sure that the money was in the bank before they went on their holiday. So I just think it was just blatant disregard for people that were not like them. It was totally discriminatory, and I just thought it was so unfair and just so callous that he didn't care. He doesn't care. He cares not, and it's so funny because the payroll person's son works in the admissions office, and get this, because I had access to the records and I have proof of it, he would intentionally not punch if he was running late or if he was leaving early so that he could get paid for his full time. And his father would pay him for his full time of working and wouldn't deduct the hour from him. So here you are, you have the nurse assistants and the supervisors who are working incredibly hard every day, working without breaks. And you would deduct time for them, not pay them overtime in cases where they did have to work overtime. But here your son is sitting on his behind, basically doing nothing, and come and go where he pleases and still get paid full salary. So I thought, you know what? It's so funny because I remember I was so outraged by what I think this is an injustice. I was so outraged by it, but I remember KL and I being in church, and the pastor spoke about people in authority, like your supervisors, your bosses, and what happens when they abuse that authority. When your boss abuses his authority, nothing good is going to come to them. So it's not. It doesn't surprise me that the facility is not running as efficiently as it should be. And it doesn't surprise me that they're slowly having to keep cutting from the budget because they don't have people coming in the way they used to. It used to be a very prominent facility because this facility actually has been handed down from generation to generation. And the current proprietor, his father, was the owner of the company before he became the owner. So at one point, it was a thriving business and a thriving facility, but it's falling apart now. And I'm wondering, is it falling apart because somebody got so greedy and so underhanded and treated their employees like garbage, then that's the reason why it's not doing as well as it possibly could do. So,
well, that's not our concern any longer.
No, it's not.
That is not our concern any longer. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something, you know, and I know with the time running down, and actually, if we don't finish it, we'll definitely get into more next week. I do want to say this, that sometimes what seems like a negative, sometimes what seems like a gut punch, it is. It is. It's a negative. It's a gut punch, yes, and it hurts, and yes, you fold up, and yes, you get emotional. I'm going to share with you what my grandmother said to me in some of these most critical times. And I'm not going to say what my time was. I just was in my room at the time, and I was very emotional. She opened up the door and said, you cry tonight, and then tomorrow get your ass up and live life. And so I'm going to say that to every one of you that's dealing with some situation, and pardon the language if that's offensive to anyone. I'm not trying to be. Is that people are going to do what they do to you, or they're going to attempt to do what they do to you. And it may be successful. They may take the job away from you, take your status away from you, take the prestige, the so-called prestige, away from you. You can't control what they do. What you can control is what you will allow to happen to you, what you don't speak on, and how you react to what happens. Meaning, if someone comes to you with something illegal and you say nothing, that's on you. They made the move. You didn't have to agree to it. But if you allowed the money to keep your mouth closed, well, then anything that happens after that, you accepted. You chose. Just like watching a crime and turning your back and acting like you didn't see the crime happen. You know what? You did. You did nothing. It's on you.
Right.
Now.
Right.
But sometimes these are blessings because some of the best stories that you have heard has come from people that have been in very, very negative situations. And I want to offer this as we get to the end. When I was a life coach last year, I had took the job. They told me it was only going to be for a short amount of time. I had taken some time off from teaching. It was one of the best things that could have happened from February to June for the 4 months that I worked. Talking to men who are mandated by the courts to be able to see their children, I had to figure out ways to get them to calm down and not be so angry with the courts to figure out what they were going to do with their kids. We would show them the movie of Pursuit of Happiness, but we ain't show them the whole movie. I would show them one particular scene, and the scene was when Will Smith, who was Chris Gardner, he's portraying Chris Gardner. I would show them the scene when he was in the bathroom, in the Oakland bathroom. And the guy was trying to come into the bathroom. He had put his foot up against the door while he's in there with his son. And I showed these men because I would say there was no way that Chris Gardner knew at that time with his foot up against the door that he was going to end up a millionaire. All he knew is he had to get through the night. He had to protect his son. He had to make it through tonight to get through to the next day so he could continue on the internship, get to the shelter, because if he got to the shelter in enough time, he had a bed to lay in. And if he didn't, then he had to find somewhere to sleep. So to him, it was, let me just get through each day. But he still had an overall plan that he was working through. But that moment right there, he did not know that the Lord had millions of dollars waiting for him on the back end. So to anyone listening that is going through something right now with work, being laid off, fired, whatever, or just can't find a job, this may be your opportunity to start to plan the things necessary to not only climb out that hole, jump out that hole, and jump into something that you may not have even realized is the ticket to your future. He knew that this internship was an opportunity at a working position. And he also knew that he had to be better than classically trained men who did not look like him. Let's keep it real. He was black. They were white. So he had to be not only better, he had to be more efficient. So he had to be so much better, extremely better. And in the end, it paid off. So not only did he get the position at Dean Ritter, he eventually got to the point where he could sell his stock and he opened up his own company, and now he's worth millions. So understand that whatever you're going through, you can fight your way out of it and create your blessing by getting started on something different. And I know that's what Tiff is going to do, because I'm going to help her do that with the opportunities that surround her at the moment. Go ahead, baby.
I just was going to say, because we don't have much more time, that I know that there are people out there who are afraid to speak up, who see things happening at their workplace that shouldn't be happening, who may know that it's illegal, and not just illegal, unethical. Sometimes I would sit in my office and wonder, how do these people sit here and allow this to happen for the sake of having a paycheck? And, you know, it may have cost me my job, but like I tell everyone all the time, there is no group discount into heaven. I still have to answer to somebody when I leave this earth. So, no, I'm not going to sit back and watch people take advantage of other people just because they can or because I'm afraid to speak up. I'm not going to be afraid to speak up. I'm going to speak up to those who are afraid for themselves to speak up. Because, you know, a lot of times people would come to me and they would cry on my shoulder, explain to me, you know, this is good. I need you to look at this. I need you to look at that. Tell me, am I wrong? Am I right? And I would explain to them what they needed to do, and it would get rectified. But I feel that if you see stuff going on at your workplace that should not be going on, you need to say something. And also understand, I know a lot of people feel, you know, in the current economic times, no one can afford to lose their job. I can't afford to lose my job. I'm 5.5 months pregnant. But the idea is there are whistleblower laws. And what that means is if you see something illegal going on your job and you blow the whistle and contact the necessary people in order to have it taken care of, if your job decides we're going to let you go now, you will probably end up with more money than you could have ever had working on the job, because you will be compensated and the job will get into more trouble getting rid of you because you blew the whistle. So just keep that in mind.
That's also why they laid Tiff off, to get rid of her. Like, get her out of here now.
So also keep in mind, keep records of things that are going on. I have records of the information that I talk about tonight. I can actually prove in writing their own letterhead where they have this information that is just completely illegal. Keep records, keep notes of dates, times, circumstances that happened, where if someone asks you, well, what were the circumstances, you can actually say, where, what, when, how it happened, so that you have a journal, a diary, whatever you have, to be able to prove what you're saying. Because the first thing people say is, oh, that didn't happen. Well, if you keep records on a daily basis of what is happening at your job and there are the illegal acts going on, it'll be hard to for them to say that it's not happening. So, again, don't be scared. Speak up for yourself. Stand up for yourself. Stand up for yourself. Stand up for your fellow man. And
20 seconds.
That's all I can say.
Tell them good night, baby doll.
Good night and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in. See you next Thursday. God bless.
You know I love you, right? Ain't nobody got what we got. Better than this.
Yeah. We've had some ups and downs, made a lot of bad mistakes, but we've always had some good times, and through it all, you held me down, baby, you've always held it down. Ooh. Oh yeah.
There were times when I was afraid and wanted you to leave, but you stayed right here by my side. You never let me go. You always stayed around.
That's right.
You stayed around.
And you've been so good to
and
me.
And it doesn't matter how slow, whatever comes our way.
I just wanna give you, make love to you, put you on a rocket, fly, keep on.